What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today it's all about free agency. At the time of recording this, and at the time I'm going to post it, free agency is set to begin at 6 p.m. tonight, June 30th. That's Eastern time, 6 p.m. ET, and that means that all teams are now free to negotiate with free agents. And I don't think you can actually sign the free agents until like July 6th when the new league year starts, but like in principle you'll see this guy signing here and this guy signing here. The trade the deal just won't be made official for a bit. And even a week back, teams could after the NBA finals begin negotiating with their own free agents. So those talks with their own players and their own free agents have been ongoing for a couple weeks now. But you can now negotiate legally with outside free agents. You'll see people like Paul George setting meetings. There's a lot of big name free agents, Klay Thompson as well. But for the Wizards, it's going to be a little bit more quiet and local in terms of they're going to look at their own free agents and try to sign some of them. There's not many. And then, some trades of veterans, sign and trade deals. So a bit more low key. You're not seeing the Wizards go out and give a match Otto Porter's contract like they did, or give John Wall Supermax, or the same Bradley Beal a couple years ago. It's going to be a bit more low key, a bit more localized to just what is going on in Washington. But look, there's about 5 to 6 key decisions that Will Dawkins has to make in the next couple days regarding the construction of his roster, what he wants this team to look like in on opening night in October. How many vets does he really want to carry? Looking at the roster, and we'll go over my projected roster because it's important in this case when you're discussing who to trade and who needs to go so you can have enough roster spots. But there's a lot of big decisions. I mean, you sign and trade Tyus Jones. Do you re-sign Vucevic? And we'll talk about that in a second, what they did yesterday. Brogdon, Shamet. Can you find good, suitable trade partners for them, or do you have to have them eat up a roster spot and possibly get, eat up minutes into next season? There's a lot to discuss, and going to try to get into it. So hopefully by the end of this episode and by tonight at 6 p.m., you're fully aware of everything that's at stake for the Wizards going forward into free agency. So the first two things I want to talk about are things that already happened, but are important in this context. And the first thing is Landry Shamet, a sharpshooting guard acquired back last June in the Bradley Beal trade from Phoenix, had a pretty down year. I think he only shot like 34% from three with the Wizards. Got hurt, so didn't play, on and off playing time. But the Wizards and Shamet agreed to push back the guarantee date of his contract. It was originally set for yesterday, which is June 29th, but they pushed it back 2 weeks to give the Wizards more time to negotiate a trade and try to find a suitable trade fit for Shamet. And I mean, look, he's a solid perimeter defender, down year shooting the ball, but he's still a great shooter. Can definitely help a contending team. And if they have, salary that they don't want, an expiring deal they can give to the Wizards, if maybe they want to attach a second round pick or two, that's a deal that I could see formulate. But if not, and they can't find that partner by July 13th, they could continue trying to push this date back until they find one. Or what I think they're going to do is just guarantee it, because you'd rather guarantee it and then, have to play Shamet in the beginning of the season. And then by February, hopefully you build up his value enough to move him for assets. Or you could simply not guarantee it, open up a roster spot, and let him walk for free. The Wizards, who are in the business right now of asset management and trying to bring in as many future picks as possible, guaranteeing Shamet's contract, whether it's to guarantee it to trade him or just guarantee it to hopefully trade him in February, I think that makes more sense, even if, yes, eat up a roster spot, eat up some minutes in the beginning of the season. Because if he does play well, you can get, a decent return for a guy like Shamet. So that's the first thing. The next thing is Rashawn Holmes, center that the Wizards picked up in the Daniel Gafford trade last year. Many people saw that 26th pick and were like, okay, that's the centerpiece. But Holmes is a pretty solid player, and obviously he was thrown in for salary filler. But he was on a $12.9 million team or player option, sorry. And everyone around the league, including myself, thought it was a lock for him to pick this up because It's rare for a guy like him, 31 years old, coming off a down year where he barely played with the Mavericks, to go out and get 13 mil per year in free agency. So I thought it was a sure bet. But the Wizards and Holmes were able to negotiate a different type of deal, which is pretty much the same thing, I feel like, as if he just picked up his option. So basically, the Wizards signed Rashawn Holmes to a 2-year, $25.9 million deal. However, while the first year is guaranteed, the second year for 13 million, only 250,000 of that 13 million is guaranteed, which means that after next season, if the Wizards of the 2025 offseason feel like Holmes wasn't that great and they can't really get much for him, they can say, here's your 250K guaranteed money. We're going to waive you, not going to give you a roster spot. And it's basically as if he picked up his team option for this year and then walked in the offseason next year. It's pretty much the same thing. So him picking up his option, this is honestly better for the Wizards because it gives them more leeway to trade him, more time to build up his value and find a trade partner. Because look, if Rashawn Holmes performs very well this year, but they can't find a trade partner, you go into next offseason, and instead of having to sign and trade him or negotiate a new deal, depending on how well he plays, he's going to be on a $13 million salary, only 250,000 is guaranteed, and you can even keep him into the 2025-26 season and try to trade him then. It increases that timeline to build up his value and move him, which is inevitably what the Wizards will try to do with most of the veterans that they acquire. And Holmes is just another case of that. So you might see 26 million to a backup 31-year-old center when you're rebuilding might not look great, but when you break it down and you understand the full context of the deal, it makes sense. It's as if he basically picked up his option. So that's Rashawn Holmes. He's locked up for the next year at least. And then you move on to Tristan Vucevic, who is the last domino of these pre-free agency decisions. And Mike Scotto of HoopSite reported this, and I immediately knew Wizards fans would start to panic. Like, what is the team doing? How can you waive basically or let your second round pick walk into free agency like that? If you didn't see it, Mike Scotto reported that the Wizards declined Tristan Vucevic's $2.42 million team option for next season, meaning that he's a free agent. And I'm pretty sure he's a restricted free agent because the Wizards have bird rights. But this is a calculated move. And even Heath Smith, who, if you've ever gone on Spotrac.com, he's a cap wizard. He tweeted out back when the Wizards signed Vucevic to last year, where they gave him like a deal where it was for the end of last year and then a team option for the following year. Everyone was like, well, why wouldn't they just give him a long-term 4-year deal like a lot of rookies get? And Keith Smith was like, well, they want to see what he can do after the end of the season, and then they want to lock him up to a long-term deal to make sure that, he can play. And so he came over for 10 games last year. He averaged 8 points, 3 rebounds. Shot the ball well from three. He was terrific if you watched any of those games. I know most Wizards fans were probably tapped out by the end of the season, but he was great. And then he gave the Wizards enough incentive to be like, all right, we want to lock this guy up for 3 to 4 more years. So this, while it might have seemed shocking that they declined such a cheap option for their rookie, Vucevic, second round pick at 42 and performed very well. This is obviously a guy that they view in their future plans. So I'd expect them to lock him up to a 3 to 4 year deal. In terms of money, I don't know. Like, he was making $2.5 million. He seemed content with that. I don't know, like a 4-year, $12 million deal, something like that, making $3 million a year. I feel like that's a pretty good deal for the 42nd pick in year two. But again, on the open market, I'd expect around like 2 to 4 million annually for Vucevic, but he will re-sign with the Wizards, so no need to panic there. So those are the kind of moves that were before free agency starts tonight. And obviously they still have to negotiate and re-sign with Vucevic and figure out what they want to do with Shamet. But the Wizards after that have realistically only two of their own free agents. They have Tyus Jones and they have Anthony Gill. And I'm going to start with Tyus Jones because I think that's the more popular of the two, obviously the more talented of the two. Tyus came to Washington. I think he was making 15 a year on that new deal with or 14 a year with Memphis. Very well deserved. I mean, he had his best career season. I mean, was phenomenal across the board. led the league. This is so impressive. Tyus Jones has led the league for six straight seasons in assist to turnover ratio. He averages, I think it's seven assists for every turnover, which is just incredible. So smart with the ball, takes care of it, finds his teammates. He's exactly what you want for a backup point guard, but I think he's going to demand 15 to 20 mil annually on the open market, and rightfully so. But with the new CBA and with a lot of teams being front heavy, where they have three guys making 40 to 50 million a year, and then they kind of got to be very smart with how they round out the roster. I don't know many teams that can afford to pay Tyus Jones that amount of money to be their backup guard. And I think you saw when he came to Washington, like, is he capable of running with the starting unit? Yes. Defensively, do you want him guarding the opposing team's starting guard? I don't know. And I don't see with a lot of these contending teams them wanting to trade assets for a what I would presume to be their backup point guard and have him making 15 to 20 mil a year. I don't think it makes sense financially. And so I think you might have a bit of issue in trying to find a sign and trade partner. And what that sign and trade would look like would be, Tyus Jones gets sent to a team like the Sixers, and if they have a $12 to $14 million in salary that they don't want, they can offload that to Washington, and in return for Washington taking on that contract and giving him Jones, Philly would give up like 2 to 3 second round picks. I think 3 second round picks has kind of been what we've seen in the market for taking on bad contracts. We saw it in Charlotte. They took on Reggie Jackson for 3 second round picks. Another team did the exact same thing. So I think a couple seconds would do the trick. And look, while it might not seem like a lot for a guy like Tyus Jones, who many thought would get a first round pick, it's better than nothing because, look, if Tyus Jones doesn't get signed and traded, the Wizards, I don't think they're going to bring him back. I mean, why would you? You clearly want Jordan Poole to be your starting point guard. You gave Jared Butler a new contract at the end of last season to be your backup point guard. You drafted Bob Carrington, who's a guard. Like, you have Bilal who could play. Like, do you really want another guy to play in that backcourt? And especially if you have to sign him to a longer term 15 to 20 million annually deal. I don't see that vision. So I think it's either Jones gets signed and traded, and the Wizards bring back salary filler and a couple second round picks, or you just see him walk for free in free agency, which sucks because that in essence was one of the biggest trade pieces in that KP trade, which you made so that you wouldn't get nothing for KP. But now that big centerpiece of that move, Tyus Jones, more, gets you a year and then nothing in return. That sucks. But look, I'd rather him walk than take up another roster spot, take up Poole's minutes, Butler's minutes. So wouldn't be the end of the world, but look, the Wizards are going to do everything they can to extract value and bring back assets, accumulating assets like they've been trying to do ever since Will Dawkins took over. I don't know if it's likely. I mean, teams I could see maybe show interest in Jones, like Philadelphia and Minnesota were very interested at the deadline. You obviously got to think about Memphis, as a team that could be in play where Jones used to play. Obviously, they still really like him. You just don't know with the salary. And, when he's making that much money, I don't know if a contending team has that cap space for their backup point guard. So that's Tyus Jones. And then you got to move into Anthony Gill, who's the only other free agent apart from, I guess you can count Vucevic in there, and then you can put Tyus Jones in there. I would give it like a 90% chance that Anthony Gill returns next season. Maybe even higher than that. I think he's 31. He's the perfect vet for these young guys. I think last season Bilal said that AG was his favorite teammate. I mean, I've seen countless teammates and staff members talk about Gil, and all they say is he's got the best work ethic on the team. He's the first one in practice, the last one to leave. He's always looking to help his teammates in practice, whether like it's literally rebounding for them or setting screens for them, playing dummy defense. Like, he's willing to do whatever it takes. He knows his role. He knows that he's not going to play that much, and he's here to benefit the team in whatever way he can. I mean, his character, everyone glows about how nice of a guy he is. I talked about this story on one of the pods a couple months ago, but when I went to the Wizards game, he came out for warmups, and he went all the way down the one side of front of courtside seats, and he just had a conversation with everyone, gave him fist bumps, just talked with them for like 15 minutes, and it made everyone's day. This is the type of guy you need on a rebuilding team as young as Washington. You don't want to be a Houston a couple years ago with Steven Silas, where you have a bunch of 19 to 22-year-olds, no veterans. You see, conflict in the locker room, guys lost on the court, poor work ethic. You have to have some vets there. They have Kuz, who's almost 30. They're gonna have some older dudes if Brogdon stays. But Gil is the perfect vet, and I think, for a veteran minimum, it makes sense not only for Gil, but for the Wizards as well. So I would expect Anthony Gil to be back on a vet minimum. And that's kind of the Wizards' own free agents. Like I said, I expect them to retain Gil and Vucevic. I don't expect Tyus Jones to be back. Holmes on that 2-year deal. They're looking to trade Shamet. That's what I've talked about so far. And then you move into Malcolm Brogdon. I feel like a bit of a sleeper piece in that Denny Avdia trade. Bob Carrington at number 14 was the centerpiece for them to be willing to trade Denny. The 2029 first round pick is great. The seconds are, so sweet in the pot. But no one has really talked about Malcolm Brogdon, and he's still got it, and he's 32, making 22.5 mil of an expiring salary. So it's a hefty payday, but it's not like he's washed. Like, he still got burst. He averaged 15 points, 5 assists with Portland last season. Kind of took a step back towards the end of the season to let the younger guys play and shift more into a mentor type role. He's still a guy that can help on a championship team, and I think he's different than Jones because he showed that, like, when he was on Indiana as their starting guard, they were able to make the playoffs and compete against Cleveland. He showed when he was in Milwaukee in those early years of Giannis and Middleton that he was able to be a very focal point on a contending team. He showed throughout his career that he's a very, very solid player, even when he was on Boston and they almost made it to the finals that year and they lost to Miami. He was a focal point on their team, whether it was off the bench or starting. So this is a guy, only 32, still's got it, has good trade value. I'd almost think that he might have more trade value than Tyus Jones. But a lot of teams need guards that can defend on the perimeter and shoot the three. Brogdon shot 41% from three. He's a great perimeter defender. I think it makes sense for a lot of veteran teams that maybe need that starting guard. And it would make sense. So again, 22.5 million is a bit tough to match in salary. I don't know who really has that big money expiring. But I could definitely see some people, or some teams rather, have some interest in a guy like Malcolm Brogdon. And look, I think in this situation, you kind of, if you're the Wizards, you got two options with Brogdon. You could keep him, start him alongside Poole, let Poole learn from him as the primary guard. Jared Butler doesn't play in this situation, which is unfortunate. And then at that deadline, you hope to have built up his value enough to move him. But the issue with this is, like, he played very well with Portland last year, and I don't know if it was Portland didn't want to trade him or no team wanted to trade for him, but they tried to build up his value and you heard nothing about him at the deadline. So you could see a similar situation to Tyus where, you have an older veteran that takes up minutes in the beginning of the season. You don't trade him at the deadline, and then he walks for free in the offseason. And then the second option is you could trade him before the season, which opens up Poole to start, Butler to be a backup point guard, and additionally keeps one extra roster spot open for one of these young guys that would otherwise probably be cut. So there's a lot to break down, and it's tough. The same thing with Jones. Like, I wish I could tell you these are three teams that are interested or reportedly of interest, and these would make sense. Like, it just hasn't been reported on, and you just don't know what teams would covet a guy like Jones or Brogdon. But I do know that they both still have trade value, and I know that Washington is looking to move on from them. So, Jones and Brogdon are pretty much in the same boat. I could see a world where they decide we want to trade one and keep one, at least until February. And fans would, I know, would be livid at that. I know they want the younger guys playing as many minutes as possible. I mean, if it's opening night in October and you see Malcolm Brogdon starting over Jordan Poole, like, some Wizards fans may riot. They may stop watching the team. And that's understandable. I mean, it's frustrating. You got a young guy that you're looking to develop, and you got another guy that will be gone in a couple months. And you're telling me as a fan that I have to sit here and watch this. Even though, even in losing efforts, I have to watch these older guys compete just to get moved. It's why the beginning of last season was so boring and frustrating, having to watch them throw out Muscala's and Gallinari's and Shamit's over your Bilal Coulibaly's and Baldwin Juniors and Jared Butler's. Like, that's when it gets frustrating. But when you're on a rebuilding team, those are the things you got to do to accumulate more assets. So while it might be frustrating, and I said the same thing about the Denny trade, while it might be frustrating and you might hate it, you can at least understand it. And that's what I hope you can understand with some of these veterans. So look, those are the moves they got to make. They got to decide if they can find trade partners for Shamit, Jones, and Brogdon. Free agents, Anthony Gill, I think, will be back. Tristan Vucevic, I think, will be back. I don't think they'll re-sign Tyus Jones. And if they sign him, I would expect it to be to facilitate another move in a sign and trade. But that's mainly the free agency aspect. And now I want to talk about, this will be the last thing. It's going to be a bit of a shorter episode, but the last thing I want to talk about is my opening night roster predictions. Because this is important in terms of deciding whether or not you have to move certain guys to open up roster spots. Like, can you keep Malcolm Brogdon if it means you have to cut Patrick Baldwin Jr.? Is it worth it? Those are some of the key decisions. So look, if you had to ask me right now, who would be the opening night roster come October? I'd start with the starters because I think you have to kind of break this down into tiers because you just the back end of the roster is so tricky with so many guys on this team now. You look at the starting five. I think Poole is your starting point guard. I'd start Bilal at the two. I'd start Corey Kispert at the three, Kuzma at the four, and Alex Saar at the five. And look, I want to say they're going to start their second overall franchise center at opening night. But look, I could also see a world where they decide that this spot goes to a Marvin Bagley or a Rashawn Holmes, which again would piss Wizards fans off. But I get it. You're trying to build up their value. Maybe Saar isn't ready. You don't want to throw him into the fire just yet. But I'm going to go with Saar starting. And then you move on to the reserves. You got, remember, 15 contract players, standard contracts on the roster, plus three additional two-way guys. So you move on to the reserves, which there's 10 of, and you start with Bub Carrington and Keyshawn George. Pretty obviously roster locks, first-round picks, won a lottery pick. They're obviously going to make the team. Not much to be said other than that. And then you move on. Tristan Vucevic, I think he'll be back. Anthony Gill, again, I mentioned, I think he'll also re-sign. Marvin Bagley, Rashawn Holmes, both will be back. They're both under contract for $12 million next year. Jared Butler just signed a new standard contract. I think he'll be back as well. And those, to me, are the only locks. So there's seven there, and I think those are the only locks. You look at the two-way spots. Justin Champagne signed a two-way contract. I think they'll give one of those to Jules Bernard. And then the third spot, I think, will go to somebody who performs very well in summer league, whether it's an overseas player or an undrafted free agent that they really like. I mean, you saw even last year, they played the Thunder. Jared Butler lit them up. The Thunder cut him. The Wizards signed him to a two-way. So that third, with the third, even the second one could go anywhere. The only one currently there is Champagne. So look, that's two of the three two-way spots that I think will be filled, and then that's seven of the 10 reserve spots. So that leaves three open roster spots for what I would say is about six players. And look, like I said, it's hard to predict this because so much can happen. I'm not Will Dawkins or Michael Winger. I don't know what they're thinking right now, but you got three open spots and you got six players. Those six are Patrick Baldwin Jr., Eugene Omorui, Johnny Davis, Tyus Jones, Landry Shamet, and Malcolm Brogdon. And look, the bubble players obviously here are Omorui, Baldwin, and Davis, because I think if you see, even if one of Shamet, Brogdon, or Jones stays, that means that one of the guys I just named is likely cut. And I have it in order. I think Omorui would be the first to go. And I know they just signed him to that standard NBA contract, but that's like 1 to 2 mil a year. The Wizards aren't really battling the hard cap. It's, you can cut their losses. I mean, if you look at last season, Will Dawkins basically paid $2 million to Taj Gibson to just be like, hey, attend training camp. We're gonna cut you. We just have money to spend, and you're not gonna be here, but here's $2 million. Like, it's not that deep. And I think Omorui has the least amount of upside by far out of Baldwin and Davis. He's what he's gonna be. He's gonna be a hustle guy on an NBA team. He still misses and bricks layups, can't really shoot the three that well. Like, he'd be the first person that I think could go at the first domino to fall here, should one of Jones, Shamet, or Brogdon have to take a roster spot. And then again, if two of those guys take a roster spot, let's say you're able to trade Shamet, or you're able to, let's say you're able to trade Tyus Jones, but you can't find a partner for Shamet, you guarantee his contract, you can't find anybody to take on Brogdon, he's on the roster. That's two roster spots that you have to give up. And obviously Umurui goes, and I think, as sad as it is, the next domino to fall is Patrick Baldwin Jr. He showed a flat flashes at the end of last season. Over the final five games, he had like three double doubles. He was constantly in the double digit realm of rebounds, making his threes, actually playing defense and using his frame to block shots. But it was too inconsistent. He had a lot of time to show himself. Even throughout the season, he'd get spurts of, good minutes, and he just wouldn't capitalize on it. And as much as that sucks, because as somebody who's had Baldwin stock and think he could still be a very solid player, the shooting has been too inconsistent, the defense has been too inconsistent, and apart from the shooting, he doesn't really show flashes of using his size to get into the paint. So, as much as it would suck if two of the veterans have to take up spots, Omarui goes and Baldwin goes. And then you get into, and this is like I don't even know how to explain. This is like the this would be crazy. Because if you have to decide if you decide to re-sign Tyus Jones to like a 1 year, $12 million deal or something like that, you can't find trade partners for Shamet or Brogdon. All three have to make the roster and play. Then you're looking at a crazy situation where you got to discuss, at least discuss, cutting your former top 10 pick just 2 years after you drafted him there. And look, as somebody, and if you've listened to any of these podcast episodes, if you followed me on Twitter at all, I'm probably one of the biggest Johnny Davis truthers. Like, and that doesn't mean that I can't sit here and admit he's been terrible or that he's not that good right now. I clearly admit that whenever I tweet about it. But I think he can be something. I think he's shown flashes of defense. There was games against Minnesota where he shot 3 of 3 from three. The shot has gotten better, but it's been so inconsistent and so up and down the last two seasons that if it's between keeping Johnny Davis or keeping Jared Butler, throw draft positioning aside, obviously, you take Jared Butler. I mean, for all the people that say Johnny Davis barely got, an opportunity last year, Jared Butler got a pretty similar role, and Jared Butler took that and ran with it, whereas Johnny Davis didn't, and that's why Butler got a longer term deal, got rewarded with a deal where Johnny Davis has just kind of been the same, a little bit better, but the same frustrating player to watch his first 2 years in the league. Even a guy like Anthony Gill, it's like, well, do you want to take the upside of Davis, or do you want to take the veteran leadership of Gill? And honestly, I think I might go with Gill. And as sad as that is to say, you got to make difficult decisions in this business. If Johnny Davis isn't working out, I don't know if it's best to give him a roster spot. And I don't think this is going to happen. I don't think there's a world where all of Shamet, Brogdon, and Jones are on the roster on opening night. But I do see a world where two of them are. So I don't think they'll have to waive Johnny Davis. But look, as you saw with the Denny Avdia trade, if you weren't drafted by Will Dawkins or traded for by Will Dawkins or signed by Will Dawkins, you can go at any point. You are expendable. And for a guy like Johnny Davis, who was the last draft pick of Tommy Shepard and not drafted by Will Dawkins, there's no attachment there. A lot of times GMs can draft guys and be too attached because, like, that's my guy, that's my baby. Like, I drafted him and I know he can be great. That's why I took him. It's tough for them to kind of sit there and admit that they're wrong. So if Tommy Shepard were here, I think there is 0-0-0 chance that Johnny Davis gets waived in year three. But Will Dawkins, you can call him and be like, well, look, this was Tommy Shepard's pick. We all know he sucks as a GM, and this is just proving it. I didn't draft him. Don't get mad at me. And so when you kind of look at all that, it's easy to understand why this could happen. And I could also see a world where they value Patrick Baldwin Jr.'s upside more than Johnny Davis's. I can't see a world where they do that same for Omurui. But these are the decisions that you got to think about proactively before you decide, can we really bring back Tyus Jones if it means cutting Landry or cutting Johnny Davis? How urgent should we be to trade Shamet and Brogdon to make sure we have these roster spots for a guy like Baldwin Jr.? These are the big decisions. So look, while I think this is going to be a rather quiet free agency for the Wizards, where you're trying to bring back some of your own guys and not even big name guys, low key guys like Vucevic and Gil, you have some trades that you can make. But look, in terms of signing outside free agents, I would be shocked if the Wizards do anything other than maybe like a veteran or like a younger guy who just finished his rookie deal and didn't necessarily pan out for that team, but Washington's going to take a flyer. You don't know. And with the roster being this full already, and three guys and vets of Shamet, Jones, and Brogdon that you're going to have to decide about their futures in the coming weeks, I don't know if it's smart for the Wizards to allocate money, especially long-term money, to anybody in free agency. You got your core of Sar. If you re-sign Vucevic, Bob Carrington and Bilal, Keyshawn George, you could even throw Jordan Poole, Corey Kispert in there. But like, you have your guys, and you want to make sure they can play, and you don't want to be signing players to win now. Like, you're fine. So I don't think they're going to sign many, if any, outside free agents. I think they're going to bring back some of their own, make some trades, and kind of be a little bit more low key. I mean, last free agency and this time last year was so hectic with the Beal trade and the KP trade and bringing in Jordan Poole and drafting Bilal, trading up for him. There's so much happened. Whereas I think it's going to be a lot quieter. But again, I said that about the draft and they traded Denny Avdia. So you don't know with this front office, but that's my expectations, and that's going to kind of do it for this episode. I hope you walked away with this, gaining a little bit more knowledge about what's at stake for the Wizards tonight, which June 30th at 6 p.m. is the start of free agency. And I hope you have are debriefed on what to expect with this Wizards free agency. Don't expect much. Expect them to retain some of their own guys. Expect them to facilitate some trades for veterans to bring back salary and some second round picks. But again, that's going to do it for this episode. Hope you all enjoyed listening. And as always, go Wiz.